Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, let me begin by wishing everyone a happy Mother's Day. It's our Mother's Day show. And when did Mother's Day start? Well, Anna Jarvis, whose birth and death were 1864 to 1948, was the originator of Mother's Day. She was from West Virginia, and she was concerned about the neglectful treatment of mothers by their adult children, as most mothers are now. The first American Mother's Day was May 10th, 1908. Flowers are traditional. Red carnations, a symbol of a living mother, but you better buy roses. White, when a mother has died. And it became official. President Woodrow Wilson made it official, the second Sunday in May, which is why we're celebrating Mother's Day. Here's a little essay, retouching essay by Genevieve Anderson, entitled A Day to Thank Mom for Everything as we celebrate Mother's Day. She writes, I can't help but be in awe inspired by the true meaning of that word, mother. The word demands a certain amount of respect, and as a matter of fact, the title is definitely well-earned. After all, to become a mother, one must take on the responsibility of sheltering a life for 9 months within one's own body. You must not only take care of yourself, but of the precious life within you. Every decision you make affects not only you at this point, but the life of an unsuspecting individual. To bear that kind of responsibility is exhausting, and to bear it for 9 months, a true challenge. That, however, I'm afraid, is the easy part. Once that 9 months is over, if all goes well or not, it is up to the mother to separate herself from the life she has clung to so tightly. The cord must be cut, and where there was one, there are now two different, very different people, the mother and the child. This is where the challenge begins. Mothering is as unique as a set of fingerprints. No two styles are the same, and you will never find two of a kind, for no one can tell someone how to be a mother. It is a job one must deal with on one's own. There's always a lot of advice to sift through, and sometimes there are lots of people to take over when you fail, but to succeed on one's own is a lifelong deed. If you are fortunate, you will realize the importance of your undertaking, and as your child grows, so too will you, learning with every challenge you must help that child face. The ultimate goal is to raise an independent individual, someone who can take care of himself or herself, stand on his or her own two feet, confidently, securely, and happily. The stress you will undergo can only be understood by another mom. When people are grown and have lives of their own, it is the mother everyone always comes back to. What was your mom like? Some of us have buried our mothers before having children of our own. Some have not done that but have no relationship with her at all. Others are close with their mothers and take the journey together. Whatever the situation, the mother is the key. The mother is the piece of the puzzle that glues your life together. She is responsible for teaching you the meaning of love, life, and self. It is to her we look when there are no answers. It is to her we go when life has lost its luster. It is to her we beg for attention, affection, and approval. It is she who demands our respect. She earned it. She deserves it. She needs it to survive. It is the only reassurance she has that she is doing a good job, that she is succeeding in her endeavor. If you're lucky enough to be able to, go to your mother and give her a hug. Let her know you appreciate her and all she has done for you. If things are not right between you and your mom, mend them. It's the least you can do. After all, think of all she has done for you. It isn't, wasn't, and never will be easy. So keep that in mind when you tell her thank you and happy Mother's Day, Mom. True words. True words. The most creative job in the world involves taste, fashion, decorating, recreation, education, transportation, psychology, romance, cuisine, designing, literature, medicine, handicraft, art, horticulture, economics, government community relations, pediatrics, geriatrics, entertainment, maintenance, religion, email, law, accounting, energy, and management. And anyone who can handle all those has to be somebody special. And she is. She's a mother. All of those things. Some quotes about moms. There was never a great man who had not a great mother. Jewish proverb, God could not be everywhere, and therefore he made mothers. This is from the Russian novelist Andrea Dworkin. For a mother, the project of raising a child is the most fulfilling project she can hope for. She can watch him, as a child, play the game she was not allowed to play. She can invest in him her ideas, aspirations, ambitions, and values. She can watch her, who came from her flesh and whose life was sustained by her work and devotion, embody her in the world. So, while the project of raising a child is fraught with ambivalence and sometimes anxiety, it is the only project that allows a woman to be through her children and to live through her children. Interesting. Youth fades, love droops, the leaves of friendship fall. A mother's secret hope outlives them all, by Oliver Wendell Holmes. God sends children to enlarge our hearts and to make us unselfish and full of kindly sympathies and affections. Finally, no matter how old a mother is, she watches her middle-aged children for signs of improvement. Some thoughts about Mother's Day as we continue our Mother's Day celebration in our show. We're going to play a little music from Pat Metheny from his CD, Still Life Talking. Last Train Home. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Pat Metheny, Last Train Home, and we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. Lyric Opera of Chicago presents its grand-scale production of Rodgers and Hammerstein's The King and I, featuring Broadway stars Kate Baldwin and Paolo Montalban as Anna Leon Owens in The King of Siam, Broadway artist Ali Ewalt as Tuk Tim, Alan Ariano as the Kralahome, Home, and Rona Figueroa as Lady Tiang. Lyric Opera's The King and I runs through May 22nd at the Civic Opera House, 20 North Wacker. We are delighted to have so many accomplished artists from Chicago and around the country making their lyric debuts in this beautiful production, says Lyric's general director, Anthony Freud. The full cast, chorus, and orchestra will collaborate marvelously in creating an exceptional experience for our audience. Based on a true story turned into a 1944 novel by Margaret Landon, The King and I arrived on Broadway in 1951 as this country was embracing its post-World War II superpower status and dealing with racial segregation. The story of the arrival in Siam of the attractive proto-feminist Welsh woman Anna Leon Owens, played by Kate Baldwin, a worldly widow with a young son and some diplomatic connections. Anna has been hired by the King of Siam, Paolo Montalban, to serve as schoolmistress to some of his 77 children. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, appearing in the Broadway revival of The King and I at Lincoln Center. Ellie has been seen in West Side Story, The Fantastics, and Les Mis. She has graced the stages of Carnegie Hall and the Town Hall. And we've enjoyed her work on the Michael Fox show, Yield, and Drama, the web series. And now she is starring as Tuk Tim in the Lyric Opera production of the producers of Rodgers and Hammerstein's classic The King and I, through May 22nd at the Civic Opera House, 22 North Wacker. On the line with us right now is Allie Ewald. Allie, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's great for you. And how are you enjoying Chicago, kiddo?
Oh, I love it. It's amazing. I was actually born out in the suburbs. I was born in Park Ridge.
Oh, you were?
I was here for a couple of years. Yep. I don't remember it terribly. I'm so nice, but it's so nice to be back.
And you left, and where did you grow up?
I grew up just outside New York City.
Uh-huh. And, of course, you went to Yale, right?
I did, yeah. I was a psychology major, of all things.
And turned to drama. Of course, I think there's been one or two pretty successful actors and actresses that have gone to the Yale School of Drama, haven't there?
That is true. I sadly did not go to the Yale School of Drama, but all of the resources were around at Yale, and I was able to perform all the time in my spare time and you know, get some great instruction as well as just an awesome performance experience.
Well, you know, you're in such a great musical, and you look back, Allie, and of course you've been in a lot of great musicals, as I mentioned in the introduction, West Side Story, and one of the great musicals of all time, The Fantastics, and of course Les Mis. But you look at the musicals of Rodgers and Hammerstein, Oklahoma and Carousel and State Fair, South Pacific, The King and I, Flower Drum Song, Sound of Music. These are the greats of the foundation of American musical theater, and to be able to be in such a integral show, it's got to be a lot of excitement there for you.
It is. It's so amazing. You know, I had an incredible teacher growing up through middle school and high school, Dr. Renato Bellatino, at my public school, and he really emphasized Rodgers and Hammerstein as, you know, the greats of musical theater, and so that's what I grew up on. So to get to be a part of, you know, an incredible King and I on this scale at the gorgeous opera house is really a thrill.
Of course, you've been at Lincoln Center performing also.
Yes. Yes, and that's a beautiful production, too. Completely different. You know, over at Lincoln Center, we're very close to the audience. Mm-hmm. Here we have all of the incredible opera resources, a huge orchestra, and really we're able to be sort of, you know, grand and tell the story in that magical way.
Well, for those, I can't believe anybody hasn't seen it, but for those who haven't enjoyed the production of The King and I, give us a little background as what the story is about.
Sure. Well, as you said, it's you know, the story of Annalee and Owen coming to Siam, which is now Thailand, to teach the king's children, and end up being, you know, kind of an incredible force in developing this friendship with the king, helping him with his diplomatic problems. Basically, you know, he was trying to save his country from being colonized, and he was successful in that in a lot of ways because he was open to, you know, ideas from the Western world, and at the same time, you know, keeping his culture safe. And in the midst of all of this, my character Tupton is given to the king as a present, as a diplomatic present, from the Prince of Burma, which is a rival country. And I am in love with another man, but essentially am given to marry the king. Mm-hmm. And Anna, in her Western romantic ideals, basically, you know, helps me keep this secret relationship alive as best she can, and, you know, to not the greatest of effects. But it is a beautiful love story that I get to tell.
And I think that's the key there. You bring that out, Allie, is that love is an important part of this musical. There's the love of country and the love of family and the love in the friendship and the romantic love between the king and Annalee and Owens. And of course, we get into social issues like the tolerance and understanding between different countries. And the king himself realizes that if he doesn't change, time will pass and time will march on, and then he'll be affected by that. So he has to change a little bit, but it's difficult for him.
Exactly. No, I think that's what's so beautiful is, you know, you're watching a story about a real-life person who just in history, of course, is so dramatic retelling of that. But the problems that he's facing and all the characters are facing are really universal and actually timeless in that way.
You know, it must be fun for you to be on stage, and you're a young woman yourself, to see the families, because this is a great family show, and if you're going to introduce anybody to musical theater, this is as good of musical as any to introduce them to young people, you know, kids in grammar school, kids in high school, of course, and to see those young faces that are looking up at you, as you were not too long ago, saying, geez, I'd like to be doing that up on stage someday.
Exactly. It's so exciting. We had a student matinee yesterday, and, you know, it may have been the first time for a lot of them to get to watch, you know, a big theatrical performance on stage, and I know I was incredibly inspired by watching other performers, you know, growing up. So it's important to, you know, to get to be a part of that, for sure.
And who are some of the performers you looked up to as you were developing your craft? And it's continuing to develop, of course, but who are some of the people you looked up to?
Well, I would say my number one idol growing up was Lea Salonga.
Oh, really?
She was the original Kim in Miss Saigon.
Right.
Tony
right.
And I am of Filipino descent, as is she. And so, you know, when I was growing up, I was pretty much told that, you know, this was the pinnacle of all performance. And she is incredible, and I've actually been very lucky to get to work with her and to become friends with her. And then, you know, the great sopranos, Barbara Cook and Rebecca Luker, all of the musical theater, you know, performers that that really inspired me growing up. You know, Donna McKechnie, the original
sure.
stars of the chorus line.
Sure.
All of that. And, you know, it's exciting for me here because I've always been a big fan of Kate Baldwin.
Sure.
I've admired her work for a long time, and to get to work with her, you know, on the direction of the King and I is pretty awesome.
Now, if you'd like to work in another musical, which one would you pick? Which ones would you like to aspire to be in?
No, I really would love to play Christine in The Phantom of the Opera. I think that's, like, risen to the top of my list. I've been so lucky to get to play so many amazing female characters, and so I'll put that out there as the, you know, the next thing I would like.
Well, I hope somebody's listening, your producer or something, so they know that. You know, it's funny, when I saw The Phantom of the Opera, and I saw, of course, I've seen the musical numerous times, and I love it every time I see it, and the movie, I've never seen a movie as faithful to the musical as I've seen The Phantom of the Opera. I thought it was terrific. A lot of people didn't feel that way, but I thought it was terrific.
Yep. No, it's true. I mean, it's such a beautifully crafted show, the way that, you know, that Hal Prince and Andrew Lloyd Webber developed that initially. Why change it, right?
Sure. So what is next up for Ellie Ewalt? You're going to be here till the 22nd. You go back to Lincoln Center?
Yeah, back to The King and I, different production. So it's really a great refresher to, you know, to get to do this production and examine the show in a new way. Really helps me to be able to approach it again, you know, in the other production.
Well, it's a delight to have you on the show, and I hope you're enjoying Chicago. I know you've been here for many years, but enjoy it while it's here because the weather is finally getting nice, and it's great to have you on the show. After the successes of State Fair, Carousel, Oklahoma, and South Pacific, the musical hits of Rodgers and Hammerstein continued. In fact, Richard Rodgers and Marvin Hamlisch are the only ones to ever receive an Oscar, Emmy, Tony, Grammy, and Pulitzer Prize. But Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein wrote for the intelligence of their audience, not only for their entertainment. They felt a social responsibility and a higher purpose in their work. Their musicals addressed social and racial biases, domestic violence, sexism, and political unrest. They tried to subtly teach lessons in their songs and music. And then in 1951 came The King and I. It won the Tony Award for the Best Musical that year, and later in 1956 was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Picture. The Lyric Opera of Chicago presents its grand-scale production of Rodgers and Hammerstein's The King and I, featuring Broadway stars Kate Baldwin and Paolo Montalban as Anna Leon Owens and the King of Siam, and Broadway artist Ellie Ewalt as Tup Tim, Ellen Ariano as the Kralla Home, and Rona Figueroa as Lady Thiang. Lyric Opera's The King and I runs through May 22nd at the Civic Opera House, 20 North Wacker, and on the line with us right now is Ellie Ewalt. Ellie, I'm going to give a phone number if people like to get tickets. It's 312-827-5600. Delightful chatting with you, kiddo, and we certainly enjoyed your performance, and everyone will until the end of the month.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellie. Ellie Ewalt from The King and I, of course. If you have the opportunity, as I said a little earlier, you know, it's our responsibility to expose young people to the theater and young students, and whether we're parents or teachers or grandparents, here's an opportunity to really expose them to one of the great musicals in the American repertoire, and that's The King and I. And delightful talking with Ellie, who's done such a great job, a young woman who's very successful and in stage and screen now, and down at the Civic Opera House to see The King and I, again, through May 22nd. For information, call 312-827-5600. Well, continuing our Mother's Day theme, an essay by Garrison Keillor, of course, the great author and radio host of A Prairie Home Companion, writes a little essay entitled, "Let's Talk Frankly About You and Your Mother." Garrison writes, "I'd like a word with you about your mother. I realize that Mother's Day is a fake holiday perpetuated by the greeting card industry and the florists, but it's here to stay, so make the best of it. and it's time you did something nice for your mother. I bring this up in advance of Mother's Day so you can plan a little bit and not roll out of the sack on Sunday, May 8th and fritter away the morning and then dash over to Mom's and on the way pick up a cheap box of chocolate-covered cherries at the gas station or a gallon of windshield cleaner or whatever you were planning to give her. Cheap chocolates are not appropriate for your mother, nor is a bouquet of daisies marked down 50% at the convenience store. What you owe your mother is a sonnet, a 14-line poem in iambic pentameter rhymed just like Shakespeare's, "When in disgrace with fortune in men's eyes, I all alone beweep my outcast state." Look it up. You can do it if you try. Your mother loves you. She has loved you from day one. She loves you on your good days and your bad. She was on her way to Broadway, and Hollywood was taking a look at her when your father got her in a family way, and she put glamour and fame behind her and had you instead. Think about it. All that pain, and then out you came. Not the high point of her day, believe me. She changed your poopy diaper when the stench was such as to make strong men dizzy. And when you hopped up and ran off, leaving a brown trail behind you, she mopped that up too. At a certain age, you put everything into your mouth. Dirt, coins, small toys, cufflinks, and when she stuck a finger down your throat, you refused to vomit. Nothing would come up. All she could do was pour Listerine in you and hope for the best. But if she tried to coax you to eat green leafy material, then you would throw up quarts of the stuff. And she'd clean it up and take you in her arms and comfort you, although your breath was rancid. You were not a bright child. I realize that you think you were in the accelerated group, and that was your mother's doing. Her great accomplishment was to protect you from the knowledge of your own ordinariness. The rest of us knew. You didn't. Nor did you realize the extent of your bedwetting. 3 a.m., you sat in a stupor while Mom changed your urine-soaked sheets, tucked you in, and sang you to sleep with "If Ever I Would Leave You" from Camelot. She loved you through the dark valley of your adolescence, when you were as charming as barbed wire. You surrounded yourself with sullen friends who struck your mother as incipient criminals. Her beloved child, her darling, her shining star running with teenage hoodlums. But she bit her tongue and served them pizza and sloppy joes, ignoring their countless shortcomings. When you were 17, when other adults found you unbearable and even your own aunts and uncles looked at you and saw the decline of American civilization and the coming of a dark age of arrogant narcissism, unprecedented in world history, your mother still loved you with all her heart. She loves you still today, despite all the wrong choices you've made. Don't get me started. Go write your mother a sonnet. It costs you nothing except some time and effort. Do not buy her chocolate. She doesn't care for it. She only pretended to, for your sake. Do not take her out to dinner. She has eaten plenty of dinners with you, and one more isn't going to be that thrilling. She might prefer to snuggle up in a chair all by herself and watch Singing in the Rain and have a stiff drink. You do know your mother drinks, don't you? Ever wonder why? So, get out a sheet of paper and a pencil. Here's an idea for a first line. When I was disgraceful and a complete outcast, you take it from there. It's very difficult to get through that essay without breaking up. You were not a bright child. I realize you thought you were in the accelerated group, but that was your mother's doing. She was trying to protect you from your own ordinariness. The rest of us knew you didn't. Garrison Keillor, very, very funny. Very funny man, and certainly true to a lot of the extent, right? A great quote from the kind of a dandy, Oscar Wilde, from his play, The Importance of Being Earnest. All women become like their mothers. That is their tragedy. No man does. That's his. from A Chicken Soup for the Mother's Soul. Mother's love is the fuel that enables a normal human being to do the impossible. Very true. A man loves his sweetheart the most, his wife the best, and his mother the longest. A Freudian slip is when you say one thing, but mean your mother. Finally, my mom is a never-ending song in my heart of comfort, happiness, and being. I may sometimes forget the words, but I will always remember the tune. Some touching thoughts. Thought we'd listen to some music from Maureen McGovern from her CD, A Long and Winding Road. We have the opportunity of having Jimmy Webb, the great musician and lyricist and composer, on the show here in a week or so. His three great songs, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, MacArthur Park, and The Moon's a Harsh Mistress. Three classics, and we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
By the time I get to Phoenix, he'll be rising. He'll find the note I left hanging on his door. He'll laugh when he reads the part that says I'm leaving, 'cause I've left him so many times before. By the time I make Albuquerque, he'll be working. He'll probably stop at lunch and give me a call. Just hear that phone keep on a ringing off the wall. That's all. By the time I make Oklahoma, he'll be sleeping. Call my name out loud, and he'll cry just to think I'd really leave him. Though time and time again I tried to tell him so, he just didn't know. A song for me, for I will sing it. There will be another dream for me, someone will bring it. I will drink the wine while it is warm and never let you catch me looking at the sun. After all the loves of my life, after all the loves of my life, you'll still be the one. will take my life into my hands, and I will use it. I will win the worship in their eyes, and I will lose it. I will have the things that I desire, and all my passion flow like rivers through the sky. And after all the loves of my life, after all the loves of my life, I'll be thinking of you.
Maureen McGovern from her CD, A Long and Winding Road. In anticipation of having Jimmy Webb on our show here shortly, three of his classics, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, MacArthur Park, and The Moon's a Harsh Mistress. And we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. Drury Lane Theater opens its 2016-2017 season with the world premiere musical comedy Hazel, a musical made, M-A-I-D, in America, based on the character from the Saturday Evening Post cartoon by Ted Key in the 1960s TV comedy series starring Shirley Booth. Hazel features a book by Lissa Levin, music by Ron Abel, lyrics by Chuck Stephan. This new musical is directed and choreographed by Tony nominee and Emmy Award winner Joshua Sbergassi, with musical direction by Roberta Dushak. Hazel runs through May 29th at Drury Lane Theater, 100 Drury Lane in Oakbrook Terrace. It's the 1960s, a time of great change for America, but not all of the Baxter family is on board. What George Baxter finds not so funny, his wife joining the workforce and his maid taking over his household and his life, is a laugh riot. Directed and choreographed by Emmy Award winner Joshua Bergassi, Hazel asks the question, can a simple maid debone a turkey, save a marriage, uncover a matter of national security, and lead a conga line? She can if she's Hazel. Hazel is based on one of the most beloved and enduring characters in American popular culture. Hazel, a saucy maid with a wry sense of humor, timeless wisdom, and a heart of gold, was created by cartoonist Ted Key and has been adored for more than 70 years. She first appeared in the Saturday Evening Post in 1943 as a single-panel cartoon and has been distributed to newspapers by King Features Syndicate since 1969, even though Key retired in 1993 and passed away in 2008. Hazel was brought to life by Shirley Booth on a TV sitcom of the same name that ran in a prime time from 1961 to 1966, earning Booth 2 Emmy Awards to go with her Academy Award and 3 Tony Awards. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning musical lyricist, having contributed to the success of such renowned entertainers as Brian Stokes Mitchell, Michelle Lee, Christine Ebersole, Lucy Arnaz, and Stephanie Mills. His work has been enjoyed by audiences on the stages of the Rose Bowl and the White House, whose stage hits include Undressed, To Sir With Love, and Different Heroes, now presenting his newest hit musical, Hazel, a musical made in America, at Drury Lane Theater in Oakbrook through May 20th. Mr. Chuck Stephan. Chuck, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Well, thanks, Kevin. Nice to be speaking with you.
It's great to have you, and I have to congratulate you on your success. Hazel is a hoot. It's really a hoot.
She is a hoot, that's for sure.
You know, it's a lot of fun. The audiences are having a ball. If for no other reason, Chuck, and I'm showing my age here, but looking back at how much fun it was to see Shirley Booth in that as that character on television.
It was quite fun, wasn't it? For those of us who remember,
right, exactly.
And her, she lives on in this wonderful comedy for family entertainment.
What was the inception here? You just come up with the idea saying, you know, we're going to put this all together. You put a team together and you say, we're going to try to revive this lady who was such a special lady in all of our households when black and white TV was still in existence, just changed over to color TV. But she was just an important person in television history.
Well, Shirley Booth, as we all know, who have seen her in action on television in this role, was a commanding presence, so wonderfully humorous, and yet had a direct quality about her that was, in essence, a big part of her personality as an actress as well. We thought at the beginning how this all happened. We were in a brainstorming session with another actress who's equally as talented and well-known, although we're not going to mention her name for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
The idea behind this was in a, as they say, a brainstorm session, and it was something that came to me. I can't explain it beyond saying that it entered my mind, and we took off from there.
You know, you look at the great songwriting teams, and of course your partner is Ron Abel, who's had such great success, and you look at the great songwriting teams of the Rodgers and Hammerstein or Lerner and Lowe or Hal David and the Burt Bacharach or Bernie Taupin and Elton John, and there's such a simpatico there. What comes first, the idea for the lyrics or the idea for the song? Did somebody think of the melody and then you're going to put words to it? What is the technique or what is the process in that whole, the way things are put together?
Who's the most awake?
Well, simply put, there you go.
Actually, Ron and myself, we've been writing for quite a long time together, and we practically finish each other's sentences, so it's second nature to us. But there's no particular order in which comes first. Oftentimes, Ron will have an idea for a melody and, sit me down and let me listen to it firsthand, and we take it from there. And other times, I may have thought of something or a particular way of saying something that's unique, and I will come to Ron with that, and then we grow out from that.
Now,
many ways.
Are there occasions where maybe you have an idea for a melody or he has an idea for a lyric and the roles are reversed a little bit?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Interesting. Interesting. And you do. I had the opportunity. This is a funny story, a very true story. I had the opportunity of having Alan and Marilyn Bergman on my show here a while back. I mean, two of the great.
You can't get much better than.
Isn't that the truth, Chuck? I mean, I was honored to have, as I'm honored to have you on the show, but honored to have them on the show. And I'm somewhat in awe. Of course, I'm with idol people that I've idolized and the music I've listened to forever and ever. And I said Mrs. Bergman. I said. She said, oh, call me Marilyn. I said, no, I can't call you Marilyn. I got to call you Mrs. Bergman. I said, how do you put this all together? How do you come up with the idea? Where do you do this in the studio? He says, no, I'm sitting right at our kitchen table right now, and and this is where we come up with our ideas. We talk, we chat. And I had told him my oldest son lives in California, lives in Brentwood. And I said... I see. She said, well, and please, when you're out here visiting your son, please stop over and we'll have a cup of coffee. And I'm thinking, boy, this is pretty an enviable position to be in. And this is as simply as it happens. I've met you and Ron are just sitting around having a cup of coffee or a cocktail or whatever. Go, this might be a good idea.
Right, right. It's as simple as that.
You know, this has been received such great success here in Chicago. And is there hopes of taking this elsewhere?
Oh, yes. Yes, we're just delighted with the response and the acceptance that this this wonderful show has and has been to us as well. We're looking forward to moving from this position as the people that will join us on the next level. Are now coming in. They're flying in, especially this month, which is our last month at the Drury Lane. And they'll be seeing the show, and then we'll be having our meetings with them and conversations on how we're going to progress from this point. But obviously, our end result we're looking forward to is Broadway.
Oh, that's terrific. That'd be terrific. And how do you enjoy Drury Lane? Isn't that a wonderful theater with a wonderful group of people?
Gosh, yes. What a beautiful theater. The management there is astounding. Kyle and Drew DeSantis, they've been just the best people to be with and work with at this. But I can't say enough about it. It's just that theater is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautifully laid out. It's a great size. The amenities they have there. You can't get better than that. You just can't.
It's funny. Their grandfather, Tony DeSantis, was one of the pioneers for musical theater here in Chicago. His daughter, who is their mom, we all grew up in the same neighborhood together. In fact, I used to caddy for Mr. DeSantis at Beverly Country Club when he was playing golf and so forth. And it's just a great.
I'm laughing because I caddied as well.
Now, where are you from originally, Chuck?
Originally from Boston, Massachusetts.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, our White Sox are playing you guys this week here.
I know. I'm staying clear of that.
Yeah, okay. Well, how often do you get out here in Chicago? How do you enjoy Chicago? You come to Chicago frequently?
I don't come frequently, and not often enough, especially the way it's been with this particular reason for being here.
Mm-hmm.
I love the city. It's just wonderful. I have been here a number of times, but not quite as many as I'd like to be, and I'm looking forward to that. Coming back here would just be a wonderful reunion for all of us. So I hope that does happen. And in fact, I'm coming back again in New York City right now, but I'm coming back again with Ron next week, and hopefully we'll remain there until the show closes.
That's terrific. Well, you have my number. Give me a call, and we'll stop out and have a cup of coffee or something in your free time.
Kevin, by all means, I'd love to do that.
Now, what is next up for Ron Abel and Chuck Stephan?
Next up for us is we're working on a new show now. I wish I could give you the information on it, but I don't want it stolen.
Okay. It'll give you a reason to come back on the show and talk about it.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I know you'll be busy. Drury Lane Theater opens its 2016-2017 season with the world premiere musical comedy Hazel, a musical made in America, based on the character from the Saturday Evening Post cartoon by Ted Kean and the 1960s TV comedy series starring Shirley Booth. Hazel features a book by Lissa Levin, music by Ron Abel, and lyrics by Chuck Stephan. This new musical is directed and choreographed by Tony nominee and Emmy Award winner Joshua Bergassi, with musical direction by Roberta Dushak. Hazel runs through May 29th at Drury Lane Theater, 100 Drury Lane in Oakbrook Terrace. And on the line with us right now is the lyricist for the great music for Hazel, a musical made in America, Chuck Stephan. Chuck, a delight to chat with you. Give our best to Ron. And seriously, when you're in town, please, from the publicist, get my phone number, and we will chat and maybe grab a cup of coffee, the three of us, and talk about this great musical you have here.
Okay, I'm saying yes right now, and we're on.
Look forward to it. Safe travels, my friend.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you very much, Chuck. Bye-bye. Chuck Stephan, the lyricist who, with his partner Ron Abel, put together the great music and just a terrific new musical, Hazel, a musical made, and I'm going to spell this M-A-I-D, in America. You know, taken from the TV show Hazel, which was starring Shirley Booth. And Shirley Booth was a very, very accomplished actress. Of course, we see her in this role, and she's like the mother, the motherly figure, and but she was just an accomplished actress, won an Academy Award and a Golden Globe, which is unusual, for her role in Come Back, Little Sheba. And usually when somebody stars in a role on Broadway, when it's made into a movie, they choose another actress for the role. But Shirley did such a terrific job. She was chosen for the role in the movie, and won both a Tony and an Oscar. So quite an accomplishment. But she's, you know, she's a very down-to-earth woman who you'd enjoyed seeing. And we looked forward to seeing. She was on CBS, and it changed to NBC for many years. And just a lot of fun. And now it's a musical, and it's at Drury Lane, Oakbrook. And if you get a chance, step out and see it, because it's a fun evening in the theater. And again, for information, 800-745-3000. You know, while we're talking about Mother's Day, one thing we don't want to forget is a beautiful gift, and that is Swirls Cupcakes from our friend Pam Rose at Swirls Cupcakes in Lincoln Park. Treat Mom to Swirls this Mother's Day because she raised you right. Two of her favorites, strawberry shortbread, vanilla cake, fresh strawberry compote and cream cheese filling, white chocolate-covered shortbread cookie, strawberry buttercream. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Chocolate-dipped raspberry red velvet cake, raspberry ganache filling, cream cheese buttercream dipped in chocolate ganache. Pam, you do it every time. Available in-store on Friday, May 6th, May 7th, or get it delivered. Gluten-free, vegan, gluten-free options, and always something great at Swirls. And if you want some information, it's right up in Lincoln Park, swirls.com. Ask for Pam Rose. She's just terrific. A couple final thoughts or sayings for Mother's Day. All mothers have intuition. The great ones have radar. Maureen Hawkins writes, "Before you were conceived, I wanted you. Before you were born, I loved you. Before you were here an hour, I would die for you. And this is the miracle of life." Only mothers can think of the future because they give birth to it in their children. Very interesting saying. Thank you. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope your listeners have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guests, Ellie Ewalt, who is now starring not only at Lincoln Center in the revival of The King and I, but now at the Lyric Opera at the Civic Opera House, 22 North Wacker, in Rodgers and Hammerstein's classic The King and I, through May 22nd. For information, 312-827-5600. And Chuck Steffen, one half of the award-winning duo of Ron Abel and Chuck Steffen. Chuck writes the lyrics and Ron writes the music. A great new musical at Drury Lane, Oakbrook, through May 20th. Hazel, a musical made in America. Fun evening in the theater. You very much look forward to it and certainly reminisce a little bit about that great maid, Hazel, played by Shirley Booth. For information, 800-745-3000. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. And in honor of Mother's Day, happy Mother's Day. Mom, you know that you are dear to my heart, and because of that, we will never part. Through childhood days of gladness, sorrow, laughter, and tears, you were always there with knowledge to share. Now that I am grown and able to reflect, I've chosen those qualities which you exude best, be it a winning smile, a kind word, or a helping hand. On you, everyone can depend. So, on this special day, Mother, I'm proud to say that it is because of you these virtues shine through. Mom, wherever you are, happy Mother's Day, and to my beautiful wife, happy Mother's Day.
Any luck, then I suppose the music